attitude. We are going to energise the country.
Stop Brexit.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Seamus, I'm not sure this is a great idea.
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will, and in this episode, I'm joined by a very special guest, a great comedy writer, a BAFTA Award winner, and the author of a new book, 52 Times Britain Was a Bellend, James Felton. Hello, James.
Hi, Will. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the podcast. So the first thing that I would like to ask is we've obviously had a rather big event today with the planned proroguing of Parliament. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's been a pretty shocking day today. I've managed to be incredibly busy during possibly one of the busiest days of the year, so I'm actually just catching up on it this evening. It's been... it looks like it's been just about everyone begging to see the Queen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, main takeaway is that it's all gone to hell. I haven't really formed my thoughts beyond that yet.
Well, one of the sort of the other questions that I would like to ask is, obviously, you tweet a lot about Brexit, and as a comedian you're able to bring out the funny side of it. Why do you think something like Brexit is such a source of comedy for people like yourself and for other comedians?
You don't have to put a lot of effort in. Politicians are constantly doing things that are either funny in themselves, or you can just look back 2 weeks and find something contradictory that they've said that'll be some kind of amusing juxtaposition. So, yeah, it's basically, I assume we're living through fairly unusual times and everything's gone to chaos. And obviously there's quite a lot of funny and all the constant gaffes that are going on at the moment, but... Sorry, this is a bit of a rambly answer.
No, it's fine, it's fine. Do you think that it can sometimes be a bit difficult, though, to joke about something that is also quite serious?
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of stuff that you don't want to joke about. You want to leave well alone. But there's this, the prospects of people not being able to get their diabetes medication. You don't really want to joke about people dying or anything like that. There's comedy to be found in elsewhere of the kind of farce of like Chris Grayling managing anything. But yeah, no, there's certain topics that you generally just stay away from if you're going to be a proper comedian.
Do you find it also difficult when you're making jokes, when people will take what could be quite a hyperbolic statement or an absurd take on what could be quite a serious matter, and then take it just what you're saying quite literally seriously, and will sort of like, you know, say, you know, you're being an idiot or whatever? How does that sort of make you feel when you're tweeting?
That's pretty constant. People tend to take things like at face value and not really realize what kind of point you're trying to make, or don't get basic exaggerations. But it's honestly fine. You just kind of ignore it, or ignore the people that aren't going to really get it, and just shut down all your notifications so that you see his praise. That's my tip.
How do you think people react when, say, for example, they will see you and they will know you for having made jokes about particular things, but you might be making a serious point about something? Do you think that it can sort of like perhaps sometimes undermine, if you're making a serious point, if people just consider you and sort of like see you as a comedian?
For some reason, people do let me do both. I don't know why, but like if they'll accept it, if it's, my Twitter feed's pretty jarring, it'll go 1 minute from just like, I don't know, some kind of ridiculous joke that, some kind of ridiculous joke or Photoshop or something, and then the next minute I'm mouthing off about Boris Johnson and in quite a serious way, or talking about anything really. And for some reason, even though people get whiplash from it, they just go along with it. I don't get too much stick to comedy or stick to serious points or anything like that. No idea why. But there seems to be a lot of comedians at the moment that are on Twitter making mainly serious points, like Mitch Benn makes a lot of serious points, but obviously does some jokes as well. Marina Hyde, she does some extremely funny columns, but she can obviously do serious stuff even within the same column, and no one bats an eyelid. Yeah, I think people just expect it now. You kind of present everything of you on Twitter rather than just your jokes.
Do you think that can sometimes have sort of like perhaps maybe a self-censoring inhibitor to what you're saying, because something that you may have sort of like thought of a joke and you might be about to write it or to tweet it or whatever, but then you think, oh well, this could be sort of like seen as being overly serious. Does that ever happen where you sort of like self-censor a bit?
Self-censor a hell of a lot, but normally deleting something about 5 minutes after I've put it out, I think, like, this is way too serious and really boring, and just delete the fact, really. But I do plenty of self-censoring of the duller, serious stuff, because I don't want to be known as someone who moans rather than as a comedy writer.
Yeah. I'd like to move on to the book, which is coming out soon. I was just wondering, you talking about sort of like having to mute notifications, all that sort of thing. A lot of people seem to, when the book was announced, to prejudge the contents of the book and got quite upset about it. Do you think that this is sort of like a problem that we have, not just in social media, but perhaps in politics as well, where people will see something and see sort of like a part of it and just think, oh, well, this is horrible, you know, this has to be boycotted or censored or whatever. And this can then sort of like harm the broader discussion.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. People react before they've really comprehended things. It's a pretty big problem online, or not. Well, obviously you've seen many, many people just reacting to an article they haven't read. I think it's pretty harmful that we do this. I'm sure I've done it myself in the past as well. But people I think it's mainly specific to kind of sites like Twitter, if I'm honest. It's just people wanting to have a take and put an opinion on it themselves, rather than really try and engage with whatever it is. You want to jump on the outrage bandwagon. I don't know if you've come across much John Ronson stuff on this,
but
public shaming and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they're quite a common thing.
Do you think that part of the reason that there was a reaction to the book was perhaps not just because of Brexit, but more broadly speaking, that we have an overly nostalgic and perhaps overly protective view of our place in the world and of British history?
I definitely think there's some of that. There was quite a big reaction from two sides. It was So it's a fun few days. from Brexiters who you even get the really strange ones saying this is completely unpatriotic, why do you hate the UK and stuff like that, and if you don't like it, leave. That kind of thing. Which is, again, I haven't read it. And then from the other side, it was people who were thinking that I was going to be laughing at atrocities, which again, I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
So from the Brexiters, yeah, there was definitely quite a lot of people who see us as quite a big force for good and don't like to read anything that would go about that against them. I think there's been, obviously, throughout politics over the past few years, we've seen a lot of cherry picking from Brexiter politicians about what Britain is like as a country, our Blitz spirit and our Dunkirk spirit, and really a very small proportion of the war spirit. And I think, so for them, I think they didn't like the idea that it's just going to be a book filled with times we're horrible.
How much do you think the way that people perceive books on history, like, for example, your book that's coming out, and say, for example, the horrible Terry Deary's Horrible History books, how much do you think people perceive it more as just, you know, not to say that the book obviously doesn't have a serious point, but to say that they take it as, you know, really, really very seriously without seeing that it is also a book that does have jokes in it and does have comedy in it. Do you think that they sort of like perhaps negate one aspect so that they can latch onto another and say, oh, well, you're not telling history as it should be told?
I think I'll probably have that at some point. you're not going to get any real, like, in-depth historical analysis. I'm no like major historian that's going to reveal something massively new to proper historians. I'm just like someone who's just trying to make quite a funny book about history. It's basically kind of, if you like kind of comedic writing about I'm terrible. I've never done a podcast before, and I'm just going to ramble and ramble.
It's all right, though.
So it's definitely more on the, here's like a fun kind of novelty book. Like, if you want to learn a bit more about British history, there'll be plenty of little surprises in there for general people, probably for some historians as well, because it's just like such a broad array of stories. But mainly you'll just get kind of a fun overview of these stories with plenty of jokes the whole way through and that kind of thing. So if you're coming to it expecting, I don't know why you would, for a book titled 52 Times Britain Was a Ballend with lots of cocks drawn all on the front, I don't know why you'd expect like a really serious historical tome, then you'd be disappointed. You'd have ignored a lot of red flags.
Yeah.
But you would be disappointed. But if you want just like a fun novelty book that's quite funny, then you will enjoy it.
Yeah. In writing the book, did your opinion about any facet of British history change?
I've studied quite a lot of history at uni, sociology and history, so I wasn't that shocked by anything. I know plenty of horrible things we've done throughout history, but it's plays on your mind a bit when you're sat there looking big long list of atrocities and just horrible little things that we've done in the past. And yeah, does kind of make a lot of current events make a bit more sense. More of a continuation than a surprise.
What was the research process for the book like? Because did you intend from the beginning to have it as a book that would look at sort of the darker side of British history? Or was it originally just intended as sort of like a more general history book that as you were researching drifted more towards the sort of like the dark?
So I was approached with the idea from the publishers in the first place. Mm-hmm. They wanted to kind of they just wanted like a fun collection of 52 things times we are Balland, basically. And it took me off in all kinds of different directions, and I wanted to have like a healthy mix. I was slightly worried the whole time that if I didn't include the really horrible stuff that I'd be hounded for that. So I did include like plenty of those, but then I didn't want to make it just this horrible, depressing, horrible look at history, because it's meant to be a fun book by a comedian. So I tried to throw in as many kind of fun, wacky things as possible. So there's a healthy mix of all of them, with a tendency towards the more fun stuff to make it bearable to read.
Just moving back more to sort of recent politics. Now, with the situation that we're having with Brexit and the deadlock in Parliament, there's been a lot of rumours as to whether there will be a general election or not. What potential comedic opportunities do you think that there could be from a general election this year between Boris Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn and all the other parties?
The obvious funny main, like funny objectively, not funny for our futures, would be to, for everything, the numbers to end up exactly the same. Yeah, forming the exact same government with all its problems. Comedically, that would be the ideal. I hope it doesn't happen. As funny as it would be. Some way out. Mainly the whole prospect terrifies me. Worried about Brexit. Obviously, the Brexit Party probably will pick up a few seats, especially if they do go into this non-aggression pact that they've been talking about with the Conservatives. Well, obviously, it's only the Brexit Party they've been talking about it so far, but I think that the Conservatives possibly going for it if they're willing to prorogue Parliament. So mainly a hellscape, maybe a few cheap laughs.
Do you ever find that your own personal politics sometimes influences the way that you tell jokes? Because of course a lot of people will, you know, sort of like attack you for being like, oh, we're lefty comedian or whatever. But do you ever think that it sort of like drives you in a particular direction looking for jokes, or are you sort of like equal opportunity?
I'm definitely less harsh on my own side, which is bad probably, but don't like to spend my time arguing with people who I feel to be on my own side. So even if I have a fairly good joke about the left, sometimes I'll just kind of ignore it. Let it die, maybe DM a few friends rather than tweet it out. I'll definitely look for it definitely influences the jokes I'll make. And yeah.
It's quite interesting you say that, because I was just wondering, does the fact that you have quite a large following on Twitter, and obviously your particular politics influences the way that you joke, do you ever sort of like worry about, say if you're making a joke about a particular person, that that might negatively impact on them, and that people that follow you might, you know, be sort of like a bit harsher towards them than perhaps you might have originally intended to be with your joke?
So I'm very selective with targets. Jokes now. To be honest, since I've had about 10,000 followers, I don't quote tweet anyone smaller than me. Anything smaller than that. To be honest, I don't quote tweet people unless they're really like MPs or things like that. And just because I don't think it's fair to swamp people with or dog pile or anything like that. So I'm quite selective. Maybe occasionally, like with an MP, I'll say something too harsh and I'll feel bad about it. But and I'm try to be as measured as possible and don't want to like incite people to dog pile anyone or anything like that. I think a lot of people should do that more. stop quote tweeting people a lot smaller than you and things like that, because obviously it's not nice being on the receiving end of it. So not many people experience that.
Do you think that that's sort of a symptom of the political climate that we are in at the moment? Because, you know, say if someone had made a joke about someone else on Twitter 8-9 years ago, then there might not have been the same sort of like visceral and polarised reaction that we have now. Do you think that that's something that's bled in from politics into everyday life?
I wasn't really around on Twitter, so don't know that much. But it's definitely been, obviously politics is a lot more, as far as I can tell from my vantage point, a lot more polarized than it was. Everyone's quite angry, sometimes with a lot of good reason, and lashing out a lot more, dividing into factions, various opposing hashtags. I think it's just politics plus anonymity to hell site. I don't really know.
You've worked a lot in TV and radio, and you won a BAFTA for the Dog Ate My Homework. Does the medium of writing in TV and radio, as opposed to say writing a non-fiction book like 52 Times Brings a Bell End, does that change the way that you approach your comedy? Does your style change at all in the different types?
It changes a hell of a lot. Just writing for a different imagined audience and trying to fit in with, say, Radio 4, TV, Radio 4, 6 o'clock slot. I wouldn't write any of the jokes that I'd normally write on Twitter. And same for writing for children's TV. I guess I just swap the word shit and replace it with that. I think it would be that effective. There's definitely a huge difference between the mediums.
We're reaching the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for being on, James. It's been great to have you on.
Thanks for having
me. I would just like to ask you one question. Today, detectorists found the second largest hoard of Norman Conquest coins in the country. And my question to you is, if you did ever become a detectorist, or if you ever used a metal detector, what would you hope to find?
A massive stash of money wouldn't go amiss. beyond a massive stash of money, something saleable. My imagination is failing me. Just look. The problem is, I'm sat here with like a stack of bills in front of me. It's clearly playing on my mind a bit.
I think most people can sympathise with that and will probably agree to finding a massive stash of money. That would be good. Thank you for being on the podcast. It's been great to have you. The book is out on the 17th of October. If it has sounded like an interesting book to you, then I would suggest that you buy it. If you've enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify. You can follow us at Debated Podcast on Twitter, like us on Facebook. See you next time.